the reality of Jesus as a historical figure, he would disprove Christianity. And so this particular skeptic dig every record he could find in secular history. The more he dig, the more evidence he found. Until finally, he recognized that there is such a person. He can't deny it. And if he can't deny it, then there are records of what this person said, and what this person said convinced this person, and he realized either it's a truth to be accepted or something that it's a myth. And he found that it was not a myth. And that person came to know the Lord, and originally he wanted to make a film about that. And finally, that film, instead of disproving the reality of Jesus Christ, it was a film that showed forth in a different way the reality of Jesus Christ. And that was the film that most of you know, Ben-Hur. That's the history of that film. So we realize that there are a lot of history in which God's intervening hand is taking place. And my friends, what we are and where we are in history, we could almost point to the world with the scriptures of Daniel and tell the world what will take place in the last day. Almost, because we are in the Gentile period. Just as the Jews took the scriptures of Isaiah and Daniel and brought it to the leaders of those days and said, look, God has spoken through a humble clay vessel, a nobody as far as the secular world is concerned, and show forth that it was God that was important. There is the voice of God speaking. Why? To warn all men that there is a God above who is sovereign and who does still control this earth. And all men must give an account of their lives. One of my good friends in the early Baptist days, where I used to stay with him in my early ministry, was a doctor, medical doctor and pathologist, and has his own pathological firm. And I asked him how he came to know the Lord and how he grew strong in the Lord. And he told me this, because he was an intellectual man, and he said there was one particular book that brought him back to God. And he said it was, I believe that was a book by Hal Lindsey, The Late Great Planet Earth. And he said he was drifting away from God as a Christian because he could not relate the faith of Christianity with the secular world. But what brought him back was the realization that the nation of Israel, that is existence today, and the miracle birth of that nation, and all the events that are taking place in world history, something that looks like it's beyond the control of any man. So powerful are world events that no human engineering in whatsoever way could control it. That he acknowledged that there's something there. It's as if God has put a witness right over there to prove that even though man cannot see the invisible God, even though modern man does not really believe in the spirit world or the invisible spirit world, yet there's a natural witness going on today in the very existence of that nation of Israel. And that brought him back to God when he realized the fulfillment of many things of the scriptures. So he realized here was a secular King Cyrus who was brought to God by one small prophecy. How powerful are prophecies if you really hear from God? Really, really hear from God. And God could use ordinary people like Jeremiah, Isaiah, and ordinary people like you and I. It is not we, our status, our background, or whatever we are that's important. If there's anything more important, it's that we must hear the voice of our God. And then we must speak the words of our God. That will affect this whole planet. In the book of Ezra, in chapter 1, verse 1, the timing for the decree of Cyrus is something that almost virtually all scholars, I would say of all the commentaries you can find, about 90% of scholars are agreed on the exact precise date, which is something surprising because a lot of scholars normally are much more clever dividing and then uniting, because they learn how to split hairs. But strangely, as far as the date of the decree of Cyrus is concerned, it is one of those dates that is the same in the secular realm and the same in the Bible archaeological realm. And that's the date you may want to take down. It's the date 536 BC. 536 BC. And if that edit takes place at that time, the prophecy of Jeremiah in Ezra chapter 1 verse 1 says, in quoting Jeremiah, about the 70 years that Israel will be under the bondage of Babylon before they are free again to return to their land. But if you trace back 70 years from 536 BC, you would have 606 BC. 606 BC. Which, according to Bible history, is the time of Jehoiakim, one of the last kings of Judah. And that tells us something there, that the prophecy of Jeremiah, you must understand all this background in order to understand what's going to happen afterwards in Zerubbabel's time, and in the ministry of Zechariah and the ministry of Haggai the prophet, who functioned about this time. Later on, let me put a little footnote here, right? And when we study the prophets, after we finish the historical books, we'll study the political books, and then we will study the prophetic books. When we study the prophetic books, you find that the prophets are divided into three groups, or you can call them two groups. They would be the pre-exilic and the post-exilic prophet. Before Babylon, after Babylon. And so that must be clear in your mind, so that when you read the Old Testament, you could place where this prophet functioned in, when he functioned in. Where and when are important when you read the prophetic books, to see the whole picture. And so Zechariah and Haggai are two prophets that are post-exilic, after the exile. And these are the prophets that function in the time of Zerubbabel and Joshua the priest. And that's the time we're reading about now, as they came back. And the reason why it's important, because we're going to consider a few scriptures of prophecy from Haggai later on, is that according to their calculation, see, just as today there are a lot of people trying to calculate when Christ will come, the day, the exact day. And recently, you know, one of you dear brothers sent me a little note and say, what do I think about that? And I keep sending them. I'm interested. I'm a bookworm. Love to read all kinds of things. And I know about the two books long ago, about the last 2 years, how somebody prophesied and wrote a book, Jesus 88 Reasons Why Jesus Coming in 1988. And then September. And then after that, the next year, when he didn't come to pass, he wrote the next book, 89 Reasons Why Jesus Is Coming in 1989. I was wondering why he didn't try the same trick in 1990 and put 90 reasons. And so recently, there is a group that is there in a certain country, and they came out and they are predicting Jesus is going to come in October 1992. The average Christian starts shivering. Right? But if you know the word, you know it's not true. It's not true. You don't have to walk in fear. And as I mentioned, I believe some time back, the closer we grow towards 2000 AD, basically the first, why am I so bold to say it's not true? Because this person based his prophecy on the year 2000 AD. He says that exactly 2000 AD Jesus will come, and so he counts backward 7 years. Very smart. Except that our AD is not quite accurate. And what about missing years? So I know there's a flaw in his mathematical calculation. No, you know what math is like. You miss a little bit, the rest of it goes wrong. And so we examined the very foundation of his calculation and found the flaw there. So based on that, the whole thing is off. And as we draw nearer 2000 AD, don't be shocked, don't be alarmed at some doomsday prophet. that will come along and say, you know, Jesus is coming, this and that, this time, that time. Because no man knows the day, no man knows the hour. We only know the season. Now, I'm not trying to get you so comfortable so that you say, ah, yeah, good thing, I can play around still. I'm not trying to do that. I like to build strong, serious Christians. But I like to build them in the right way, not out of fear. I believe in living prepared that the Lord come anytime. But yet, at the same time, we don't want to motivate by fear. We want to motivate by giving people an understanding. I would prefer that people understand, believe, and then walk in it and act in it, rather than we teach people and we dominate them to obey by fear. And so the reason why we are looking at these dates is because they had the date problem in their time. They had a lot of people who were calculating Jeremiah 70 years. So according to the true prophecy, let me give you the true one. It's happened in 536 BC, which means about 606 BC, Jehoiakim came under captivity to Babylon. Interestingly enough, it took exactly 70 years. Jeremiah was precise right to the year, right to the time. Of course, we know from the book of Daniel, which we will study later, that there are two interpretations or two aspects of the 70 years. One of the aspects is a literal fulfillment, which happened in the Jewish time. The other is the eschatological fulfillment, which means that each of the year, there are 70 weeks of years. And that stretches it further to Jesus coming. So that's the other fulfillment. But the literal fulfillment is here in Ezra chapter 1, verse 1. And why is it important? Because the actual time when all of Judah was wiped out took place much, much later. In the book of, turn over to the book of 2 Chronicles, which is just a book before this. 2 Chronicles. You notice that after Jehoiakim is Jehoiachin. Related to. In the book of 2 Chronicles, and in chapter 36, the last chapter, verse 5, Jehoiakim reigned. And then in Jehoiakim's time, verse 6, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up against him and bound him in bronze fetters to carry him off to Babylon. And he set up a sort of a puppet king, a vessel king called Jehoiachin, took over from him. His son Jehoiachin reigned in his place. So Judah was actually still functioning as a vassal state of Babylon, paying tribute to Babylon after Jehoiakim was captured. Incidentally, if you read Daniel chapter 1, verse 1, you realize that Daniel was among the first captives taken during Jehoiakim's time. So don't miss between the Kim and the Chin. Remember, the Kim is the K one is the king, right? Jehoiakim. And he comes before his son was Jehoiachin.